Eventually, it came down to choosing between power and survivability. The body tempering manual would probably make him stronger as long as practicing it didn't mess up his body, but he was already plenty powerful for his level. The soul strengthening manual, on the other hand, could help him strengthen his soul, which was something Zack desperately needed in his fight against the splinter. He had already sensed the difference an empowered soul could have on him during his previous fight. The splinter had been truly agitated due to the mind invasion, but Zack had yet been able to stay mostly calm through the fight. If it had been before, he would probably have unleashed deforestation in a muddled rage before he could analyze the situation. The splinter was a constant worry, and he needed a long-term solution that wasn't reliant on the miasmic fractals. This might be his only chance to get his hands on a soul-strengthening manual, and he had to take it, even if it would slow down his cultivation or make him miss out on forming a constitution. Besides, with his path of cultivation, he would probably spend a lot of time on the sickbed, wounded from cracking open nodes by force. Galvarian had been forced to recuperate for centuries, and Zack might share the same fate, even with his constitution. Tempering his soul during the downtime would allow him to keep improving, even when he was hurt. The moment he made his choice, he was immediately sent off to the next world, and he barely had time to stash the radiant crystal that appeared in his hand before the whole field around him shook as tens of thousands of bodies rose to their feet. One quick look around seemed to indicate that he was on a battlefield between an insectoid species and a mix of their undead counterparts and humanoid zombies, and judging by the groans and roars from the surroundings, the undead had won. Rebuff the invasion. Zack wasn't surprised to see the quest, and he summoned the independent fractal blade of Chop to start clearing out the surroundings while he got his bearings. If he was supposed to rebuff the invasion, he needed to find either the incursion of the undead or whatever means they had used to arrive at this planet. After that, the most straightforward thing would be to cull the leaders of the invasion, which would hopefully force the soldiers to flee. Of course, it was a possibility that the leaders were far beyond his reach, at which point he would have to figure out how to swing the war in the insectoid's favor. But Zack suddenly frowned as he looked around the area, and his eyes started to shimmer as he activated cosmic gaze. Were the undead really the targets?
Something is going on!
A shout echoed out from the distance as a group of humanoids rushed toward Zack, pushing the slow-moving zombies out of the way.
Why the hell is one of the mercenaries among the children?
Zack curiously looked and saw that the new group was drenched in darkness to his eyes. Every part of their bodies was covered in death-attuned energies, and it was easy figuring out that they were undead, though these ones were sapient. They were a mix of different humanoid species, and it looked like some of them had swapped out certain body parts. The fact that they were all sapient meant that they were E-grade race, as far as Zack knew, but his knowledge about the undead was pretty much limited to what Anzanil had told him. Perhaps there were situations where even lower-tiered undead could gain intelligence.
Please, my lord!
One of the humanoids shouted from afar after having stopped outside the reach of the fractal blade that was still reaping zombies left and right.
The children are innocent! They just haven't woken up yet. Please don't waste your strength on them.
Zack shrugged noncommittally as he ordered his blade to return to his side. He had already realized that something was odd even before the group of undead approached him. He had first thought that the scenario was an invasion of the undead empire, but the fact that the area was teeming with miasma made Zack realize that might not be the case. A bunch of killed zombies certainly would release some miasma, but this battlefield essentially felt even more death-attuned than the core of the Dead Zone, and the effect hadn't nearly been this pronounced in the battles he had fought with the undead outside their incursion. Besides, some insectoid species were extremely invasive as well, just like the Ein hive beasts. Given enough time, they would swallow a whole world, and Zack knew there were many more species like them. The scenario became clear after hearing the exchange between the undead. It looked like he was designated as some sort of mercenary, no doubt hired to help the undead forces rebuff the insectoid invasion. Luckily, he had some experience in dealing with insects, and the mission seemed straightforward enough. Unfortunately, he had just been caught red-handed slaughtering people from his own side. The only solution he could come up with was to act like an aloof master, which hopefully would allow him to not sour his relationship with the undead empire. It was best if he could keep his alliance with the undead to gather intelligence about his target.
"Thank you, my lord," the undead said as he scurried closer, allowing Zack to breathe out in relief.
The undead was level 60 at best, just a bit better than the extremely weak corpses around them. The low levels of the people made Zack believe this was a low-tiered world, just like the one before this.
"My lord, I am not sure how you appeared here,"
the man hesitantly asked as he stopped a few meters away from Zack.
"I got a bit lost," Zack said. "Can you lead the way out of here?" "Certainly,"
the undead nodded.
"The children won't attack you as long as you are accompanied by one of us."
Zack was slowly led out of the sea of zombies, and he quickly learned that it was not actually a battlefield, but rather a dumping ground where they had left a mix of acquired corpses and insectoid invaders to slowly turn into true undead. Zack's arrival had stirred them prematurely, and they would be kept there for some more time to gestate. Zack was pretty curious about the society of the undead empire in general, but there was one thing he wanted to check first. He quickly took out the luminous crystal he had just gotten, and he infused his mind into it to see what he had. 9 Reincarnations Manual. Temper your spirit through 9 reincarnations of life and death, and form an impregnable soul immune to the ravages of samsara. Zack's eyes lit up when he read the introduction, and any regret about missing out on a body-tempering manual disappeared. It looked like he had just hit the jackpot. Didn't this sound like a manual made for him, with his ability to jump between being living and dead? Chapter 16. Lord Draugr. Zack had no point of reference when it came to soul-strengthening manuals, but the one he held in his hands seemed to be pretty damn strong, even if he didn't have his unique constitution. It wasn't quite as tailored to his situation as he first had thought, though, and it wasn't strictly limited to people who walked the path of life and death. The method to train in the manual was to push one's soul to the peak of life before plunging it to the depths of death, simulating a lifetime. After completing enough such revolutions, one's soul would undergo a rebirth, shedding some of its imperfections and growing in strength. If one managed to complete all 9 reincarnations, they would possess what the manual called a 9 samsara soul, and it would be so strong that he essentially wouldn't even need mental protection skills like mental fortress to stay safe. His soul would turn even more monstrous than his nigh indestructible body. The number of revolutions one needed to complete a reincarnation wasn't clear, but judging by the language in the crystal, it would be a massive undertaking to just complete a few reincarnations, let alone all 9. But Zack hoped that his ability to swap between life and death would be able to expedite the process, though that would probably require some experimentation. However, there were 2 problems with the manual. For one, only the method for the first 4 reincarnations were included in the crystal. He would have to somehow find the rest elsewhere if he wanted to continue practicing the skill, and Zack had no idea where he would even begin his search for the missing pieces of a manual like this. He couldn't just jump into a bunch of mystic realms hoping to be lucky. The fact that the manual was split up could also be seen as a positive. Zack only gained the earliest stages of the manual, meant that it was probably beneficial even in higher grades. It would have been a shame if he got one that was only useful in E grade, after which he would have to swap to a new one. The second problem with the manual was a bit tricky as well. Each of the reincarnations required specific environments to practice. The first reincarnation only required him to meditate within one of two specific arrays, one death-attuned and the other life-attuned. Kenzie no doubt could help him build two chambers meeting the requirements, since Zack had the schematic, but she probably wasn't able to put them on array disks just yet. Perhaps this was where his unique situation could come into play. If he could swap out the increasingly stringent requirements with simply swapping back and forth, he would save an enormous amount of time and resources. It seemed unlikely that he would be able to practice the manual inside the tower, though it wouldn't hurt to try it out. Zack put away the crystal and looked over at the undead with some curiosity. This was the first time he had talked with a sapient undead, unless you counted his encounter with the Draugr woman in his vision.
"What race are you?" Zack suddenly asked, breaking the silence. And what's your name?"
"Ah?"
the undead who walked alongside him started.
"Is your race zombie, or are you a corpse lord?"
Zack asked with curiosity.
"A zombie is a derogatory term for those who still haven't awakened,"
the undead answered after some hesitation.
"My name is Eldar, and I am a revenant, the most common race of the undead."
"Could you explain a bit more? What's the difference between a corpse lord and a revenant?"
Zack asked.
"It seems we have the time."
"Well,"
Eldar said with clear conflict on his face. Zack understood what was troubling the revenant, which gave him an idea. There was something he could test that might make the group more talkative.
"Wait a minute," Zack said as he stopped in his tracks.
The group of undead stopped and looked at Zack with confusion, and their eyes widened in shock as Zack's skin turned deathly pale, and he started to release a massive amount of miasma around him. His brown eyes quickly darkened until they were two black globes leading into the abyss.
"Wah? How?"
the undead sputtered with confusion on his face.
"I am Draugr. I simply used a skill to look like a human,"
Zack said as he turned his abyssal eyes toward the group.
"I have been traveling among the living for all my life. This is the first time I actually stepped on death-attuned soil. I hope you can answer my questions and clear up some points of confusion for me."
Of course, he said. "I am sorry, Lord Draugr."
Zack nodded in relief. This was one of the loopholes the trio had found during their climb, mostly thanks to Agros's predilection of talking far and wide at any tavern he could find. Their races were never an issue, as though the system forced all the natives to be enlightened and look past race. However, if you mentioned your race, they would understand you, in contrast to mentioning the Tower of Eternity. They hadn't found any use for that small feature, though, until now. The Revenants had already been respectful earlier, when he was a powerful mercenary hired to help in the war, but now it was as though they looked upon an idol.
"I am sorry for the discourtesy just now,"
Eldar said as he bowed deeply.
"It's fine. I understand that you'd be hesitant to discuss this matter with the living,"
Zack said.
"Now, about the races? I have traveled with my master my whole life, and he hasn't explained all these things for me for reasons I cannot disclose. But now that I am returning to the Empire, I need this information."
It was a pretty horrible excuse, but judging by the attitudes of the group of revenants, they wouldn't question him no matter what he said.
Ah, yes, certainly,
Eldar hurriedly said, though he looked pretty confused.
May I ask which empire you are referring to? Our kingdom of Zarvadar borders no force that can be considered an empire, as far as I can tell.
Zack frowned in confusion for a second until he realized the problem. This world wasn't actually part of the Undead Empire. How could it be? It was part of the Tower. The inhabitants of the worlds were never aware of anything larger than their planet, and higher-grade beings were mentioned as things of legend. That meant that he, unfortunately, couldn't milk Eldar for information about the Undead Empire. Perhaps it wasn't completely a loss, though, since there were still a lot of things that he might know. There was only one undead force in the multiverse, as far as Zack could tell, and this world should no doubt be based on the situation in the Undead Empire.
Never mind. I cannot divulge it.
Zack coughed.
Now, about the races? As you probably know, most of our population comes from corpses awakening, just like the field you saw earlier,
Eldar said, eager to please.
Only the powerful can conceive children of their own, so adoption is more common, and these types of children are all revenants. However, the undead are special in that some can change their race to a certain degree. Those supreme existences, such as Lord Draugr, does not need such things. Some shed their mortal coil through a ritual to turn into pure beings of miasma. They gain races such as wraiths and specters,
the revenant explained.
A few others choose to become corpse lords. Corpse lords are a manufactured race. They are built by taking extraordinary body parts from multiple sources, creating a stronger-than-average body. Their progeny inherit a mix of their parents' bodies, which can both turn out great and pretty bad. Corpse Lord clans are usually subservient clans to either liches or one of the five noble races, since they were manufactured.
Do Corpse Lords have any weaknesses? Zack asked.
Well, combining body parts is a hard venture, and only the most skilled liches can do it without side effects. Most corpse lords are cursed with their body parts being in dissonance. They need to take a medicine to quell the effects, and they are always looking for more compatible body parts. The risk for an earlier descent into madness is also pretty high.
Then why would a revenant choose to become such a being? Zack asked with confusion.
Ah, Lord Draugr might not know, but cultivation comes hard to us revenants. We are not blessed with your talents, and becoming a corpse lord is somewhat of a shortcut to power some choose to take,
Eldar explained, not without some helplessness on his face.
Most revenants are forever stuck at F grade, unable to truly enter the path of cultivation.
Zack slowly nodded, remembering Maul, the Corpse Lord General. His research had been related to this subject. Infusing Draugr genes into one's body would be able to increase the affinity with miasma, and perhaps even decrease the dissonance between body parts.
Never mind,
Zack said, realizing he'd asked something he shouldn't have.
Are liches one of the noble races? Liches aren't a race, Eldar said with a shake of his head. It's more of a position, as well as a branching class tree. Creators of undead, miasma controllers. That incubation field you ended up in was maintained by a group of liches, for example. They're needed to speed up the awakening of the children, but there are also many combat-oriented subclasses.
So, what race are they? Zack asked with confusion.
Most are revenants, but the most skilled liches are, of course, among the five noble races. apart from the Eternal Clan, who exclusively follow the Sanguine Path.
I know of the Eternal Clan, Zack slowly said.
But what about the other three races? Apart from your noble bloodline, there are the Ishrak Reavers. Their bodies are the strongest of all undead races, without being burdened with any of the demerits the Corpse Lords have. Then there are the Eidolon, the leaders of the Spectres,
Eldar explained.
They are the only spectral race that is born that way, never having shed their physical form through the ritual. Most believe their control over miasma is second only to the Founders.
Do you know what the Founders look like? Zack asked.
My master never told me.
Zack had no idea who these Founders were, but he had an inkling. He kind of wanted to ask to make sure, but he saw the gazes of the group of revenants. He had clearly asked a bit too much, and Zack was afraid that going too far would label him an impostor or something, making his quest all that much harder.
No, the form of the Exalted Founders are beyond the knowledge of remote kingdoms such as ours. They are the origin of our species. I am sure they live in far greater places than here. Places where the miasma is dense enough to turn liquid.
Eldar sighed, clear longing on his face. Zack's eyes lit up when he heard Eldar's explanation. One popular theory was that the undead races were created by one single supreme existence, someone at the level of Emperor Limitless. He would probably have become an apostate if he appeared in this era, but this had all happened before the system arrived, as the undead had existed even before the system. These Founders might be the descendants of this grand ancestor, and if that was the case, it wasn't surprising they would be considered the greatest undead race. After some more questioning, he got a pretty decent understanding of the undead races. The Draugr could be considered the jack-of-all-trades of the five noble races. Their bodies weren't as excellent as the Ishrak Reavers, and their affinity with miasma wasn't as great as the Eidolon, but they still excelled in both those subjects, making them excellent all-rounders. The Eternal Clan followed the Sanguine Path, as Eldar called it, and there even seemed to be some confusion whether the members were really undead or not. Some believed they were rather a closely allied race that had decided to join the undead for some reason.
Thank you, Zack finally said after he had satiated most of his curiosity.
There was still a lot that he wanted to know, but he felt that it would be too suspicious if he kept going. He instead turned his attention to something else.
Where are we heading? Zack asked as he looked at the desolate surroundings. We have set up a fort an hour's travel from here, Eldar explained. You and the other mercenaries were supposed to be placed under General Nixie, but now I am not sure.
Zack understood what he meant. Perhaps it would breach some sort of protocol for some normal undead to order around a Draugr.
I need a place with both miasma and normal cosmic energy, Zack said, switching subjects. Certainly. Eldar said, though his face looked like Zack had asked for a huge pile of feces to be placed in his bed. We have already erected arrays to convert the energies for our guests. I'm sure one of the array masters can make some adjustments.
Zack nodded in thanks as he thought of his next move. He didn't have a lot of time on his hands, but if there was one floor he should stay some extra time on, wouldn't it be this one? Where else would he be able to find assistance in grinding the levels of his skills? Where else would he get tips on controlling miasma? It was time to integrate into undead society. Chapter 17. War.
Charge!
Zack roared as he pushed forward, each step causing the ground to shudder as his frame grew and quickly became ensconced in pitch-black armor. 10,000 revenant warriors roared in response, charging the insectoid army without any care for their lives, as a thick haze of miasma covered the battlefield hundreds of meters in each direction. One after another fell as they approached the defensive line, but a fanatical gleam burned in the eyes of the survivors as they kept running. Zack had severely underestimated the impact a purebred draugr had in undead societies. He had figured it would be something like an elite on Earth. It would elicit some admiration and perhaps jealousy, but nothing too extravagant. But he had been sorely mistaken. He had been given a king's welcome the moment he arrived at the base camp, and the Revenant General had even offered her position to him without hesitation. However, Zack had declined, instead opting to take command of an elite troop of 10,000 warriors with the intent to train his skills. Anzanil, the old horn dog, had also hit the mark on the pull of his race to the opposite sex. He had essentially been visited by half of the eligible E-grade females in the kingdom by this point. He had only managed to stave them off by indicating that any spread of his bloodline would be met with swift and bloody retribution by his elders. He knew the effect wouldn't be that pronounced in the real undead empire, though, as there apparently had been no one from the five noble races visiting the kingdom of Zarvadar for millennia. Giving birth to a progeny that was even half draugr would skyrocket that family into the stratosphere. The interest had barely waned from the threat of his imaginary elders, though, and joining the battlefield had as much been an escape from the incessant courtships as it was a way to improve his skills. He had already confirmed that the Floor Guardian was a breeder, which was a specialized clone of the Queen. She resided in a hive that had fallen out of the sky one day, continuously spewing out new soldiers. The original script was probably to help the war efforts to the point that a large-scale attack on the hive was possible, though Zack felt somewhat confident in assaulting the place alone after getting a grasp on the power levels involved in the struggle. However, Zack wasn't quite ready to leave this floor yet, as he had found it extremely rewarding to use his class as it was intended. Zack was almost upon the defensive line of the insectoid army he had targeted, and he quickly summoned the massive shield from Immutable Bulwark. It had slightly changed shape to look like the armor he wore when using Vanguard of Undeath, and he used it as a wall breaker when he slammed into the row of hulking insectoid brutes that held the front line. The specialized defenders were even larger than Zack in his transformed form, but they still flew out of the way as though they were made from styrofoam as Zack ripped into the army. 100 skeleton warriors rose from the miasmic mists the moment Zack had pushed his way inside, hacking and slashing in every direction. They caused massive confusion among the attackers, which allowed Zack's subordinates to widen the breach into a massive hole. Soon enough, the Revenant army cut their way through the middle of the army, wedging themselves in and forcing the insectoids to split in the middle. The roars of battle echoed in Zack's ears, and it felt like the battle lust of his warriors empowered him. In fact, the accumulated killing intent of an army of the dead had been the key to upgrading Indomitable, and it had pushed to middle proficiency during his first skirmish. He had initially thought that the only way to improve the skill was to be hit with mental attacks, but he realized he had been completely wrong. Hundreds of ranged attacks soared toward the vanguard, and Zack infused his fractal shield with the seed of Sanctuary, quickly increasing its size to encompass the elite core of his army. The seed was nowhere as strong as his fragment of the coffin, but the coffin didn't help increase the area he could protect. Unfortunately, he would soon lose even this capability, which was the downside of abandoning the fragment of the shield in favor of his life-death duality. Whatever fragment the Seed of Sanctuary turned into, it would no doubt be life-attuned, which would probably make it impossible to use with his current class. Of course, the Revenant army wasn't helpless, even if Zack couldn't protect them all. They formed a second layer of defense in the sky that blocked out most of the attacks, and the soldiers ripped into the insectoid ranks with brutal fervor. Meanwhile, 10 massive beacons were erected, and 9 enormous cauldrons were placed between them. It made Zack remember Maul and his elite army. He had used cauldrons as well, though the way these warriors used them was slightly different. Massive black clouds started to billow out of the cauldrons in no time, and Zack knew it was a death-attuned poison that only affected the living. Dozens of liches instructed the mists to roll into the swarm of insectoids, wreaking havoc on their ranks. Zack had learned that the spellcasters of the undead armies generally followed 3 heritages. First were the poison masters, such as the liches in his squad, using toxins to cause widespread death. There were also many ice-attuned mages who fused death and frost into extremely potent attacks that froze both the bodies and souls of their foes. Finally, there were the soul manipulators, who used mental attacks, curses, and illusions. However, these specialists were extremely rare, and usually required inborn affinities, sort of like the purifiers on Earth. There were certainly more classes, but these 3 were the most common, at least in this kingdom. Zack had thought it had something to do with affinities, but the reason was a lot more pragmatic. The spellcasters of the undead armies leaned toward classes that would leave the corpses of their enemies intact. A fireball could turn a dozen warriors into cinders, but that would mean that the kingdom missed out on having a dozen new soldiers join their ranks. The battle quickly turned into the undead's favor, and not just because Zack mowed through the army like a bulldozer. The 2 sides were almost equal in strength before his arrival, and the single edition of Fields of Despair had tipped the scales in the Revenant's favor. Zack had only utilized parts of the skill until now, the part that recovered miasma from kills, and the part that weakened enemies. But with an army of the dead at his command, he could utilize the skill to its full effect, where the undead around him also benefited from the skill. He had initially expected that all the miasma released from kills would go to him, but Fields of Despair actually provided the energy to the one who landed the killing blow. So the skill didn't just weaken the enemies, but it also increased the endurance of the undead, allowing them to keep fighting. Using skills as they were intended was the best way to increase their proficiency. Zack had managed to push Fields of Despair to late proficiency after just a few fights, and the skill reaching late proficiency actually benefited him. Back when he'd upgraded the skill to middle proficiency, the only thing that changed was that the skill's coverage more than doubled. Upgrading it to late proficiency had doubled the area once again, and by this point it was able to cover almost a third of a battlefield this size. 1 more upgrade, and he would probably be able to cover a square kilometer in miasma. That wasn't the only benefit the skill provided after getting upgraded. He could actually feel the combatants within the mist now. The effect was nowhere near as comprehensive as the omniscience of Hatchet Man's spirit, but it was more akin to having radar and sensing everyone in the mist like hazy blips. He wouldn't be able to use the new feature to dodge attacks, but he would be a lot harder to sneak up on this way. Hiding within the miasmic mists would be impossible without possessing some sort of counter.
"I'm going in,"
Zack said to the 2 powerful warriors who had fought right behind him the whole time. They were his 2 assigned lieutenants, each chosen due to their ability to stay alive at the head of the battle.
"We'll hold the line,"
Ervos, a revenant created from a massive ogre, grunted as he crushed an enemy with his barrel-sized mallet. Zack nodded before slamming one of his feet into the ground, disappearing in a puff of miasma. He appeared in front of a group of massive ants at the rear of the army, each of them well into the E-grade. They were war beasts that the insectoids reared, and one of the most powerful weapons in their repertoire. Sitting on their backs were a group of commanders and beastmasters, and it seemed as though they had been expecting Zack's appearance. 10 pillars of light appeared around them, forming an array with Zack and the ants in the middle. A heavy pressure suddenly bore down on his shoulders, whereas the insectoids seemed unaffected at all. Zack frowned as he looked around, but he still proceeded with his plans as he stomped the ground again, erecting the cage of profane seal. The mists of fields of despair were joined by the black, churning clouds of winds of decay. He didn't imbue the mists with the Tao of the coffin, though, but he had rather chosen to imbue profane seal with it. His Tao fragment had amazing synergy with the skill, and not using the two together would be a wasted opportunity. First, it made the five towers and their corresponding gates pretty much impervious to the outside forces who tried to break in and assist their leaders. Secondly, it empowered the chains immensely. The spectral chains had become a bit useless against the targets Zack mainly focused on with the skill, instantly crumbling from the attacks of the powerhouses. But the chains now required tremendous effort to destroy by the insectoids, making them far more lethal. They also gained a corrosive effect when they attacked, and could even deal significant damage by just lashing opponents. Zack felt as though he were mired in quicksand due to the array, and he was utterly incapable of dodging the rabid attacks from the massive ants, who tried to gore him with their sharp legs. But he had never planned on dodging anything anyway, and he started to whittle down the massive insects with the help of Deathwish. The E-grade warriors quickly realized their plan had failed, and they jumped down from the backs of the ants to increase the pressure. But Zack was like a whirlwind of death as his massive miasmic barditch ripped through the thick plating of the ants and the bodies of the insectoid leaders alike. The massive pressure he was under from the array started to take its toll, and he was starting to run a bit low on miasma. However, Zack didn't worry as one of the gates to profane seal soundlessly opened while Zack kept the insectoids busy. The doors closed again just a second later, while one pillar after another exploded as spectral warriors appeared out of nowhere, killing the array masters and dismantling the array in seconds. After they had completed their main mission, they started to take out the normal soldiers in the cage that the spectral chains still hadn't dealt with. Zack wouldn't have any issue dealing with the array himself, but he wanted to use the various squads in his employ as much as possible. It wasn't due to something as noble as giving his soldiers a chance to grow through battle. Zack knew very little about the war tactics of the undead, apart from the mindless hordes of the unawakened revenants. Alea had partly suffered her grievous wounds due to lacking knowledge as well, not expecting to get ambushed by ghosts like that. He didn't want that kind of surprise to happen to his armies in the clash against the undead incursion. He had unearthed all kinds of knowledge during the 3 days he'd stayed on this floor. One small tidbit was that the spectral warriors couldn't pass through Tao-infused surfaces or skills with enough power. That was why he'd needed to open the door for the ghosts to enter his cage. Similarly, if warriors had their Tao field unleashed, they wouldn't be ambushed out of nowhere, as the spectral warriors would be slowed by quite a bit. Having one's Tao field constantly active would put a drain on one's soul, but it would be worth it in the heat of battle to avoid unwelcome surprises such as getting skewered from a ghost popping out of the ground. With the threat out of the way, Zack methodically killed off the leaders one by one, leaving just the largest ant alive. Zack no longer had any means to see its level, but he guessed it was around level 85 and focused on endurance. It was a perfect target for his daily practice.
"You can go,"
Zack said with his deep voice. The ghosts who had remained inside the cage until now bowed before they streamed out through a gate that Zack opened, leaving Zack alone inside. Zack cracked his neck as he looked at the target dummy in front of him. The past 3 days had been full of failures, but today he'd conjure those bronze sparks no matter what. Chapter 18. Repurpose. The departure of the spectral warriors left only Zack and the remaining ant inside the cage. along with 100 decaying bodies that slowly replenished his reserves with miasma. He was still uncomfortably low on energy, though, so he bit down on a pitch-black pill that turned into a thick sludge that ran down his throat. A surge of miasma spread through his body, almost instantly restoring a fifth of his miasma reserves. Zack tried not to think of the foul taste of the warrior pill he just ate as he swapped out Verun's bite for one of his disposable axes. It was a pill that had a similar effect as cosmic water, but without the downsides, as long as you used them in moderation. The warrior pill was a lot weaker than the water, though, and you could only eat one a day before side effects started to crop up. Next, he dispelled Vanguard of Undeath and shrank back to his original size. He wanted to experiment with his Tao's, and he had found that his control got even worse in his transformed body. Miasma kept churning around in his body to keep the miasmic armor and weaponry active, which might cause some interference. Or it was just the fact that this spiritual energy needed to travel further when his body was bigger. The air around Zack started to shudder as he unleashed his Tao field for his axe fragment to the utmost. The ant seemed to sense the threat and attempted to ambush him, but Zack kept dodging as he tried to regain the feeling he'd had during the Tao discourse. It was obviously harder to concentrate with a massive beast trying to skewer you, but Zack felt that it was far easier to make breakthroughs mid-battle compared to sitting alone in a courtyard meditating. The pressure and risk of death would stimulate his potential, and something new would hopefully be born from his struggle. The atmosphere inside the cage kept changing as Zack switched back and forth between the Tao fields for his two fragments, one moment containing invisible blades and the next second corrosive winds. He had kept trying to recreate the Tao storm with the help of his aura over the past days, but he was simply not making any progress. He did at least manage to superimpose the two Tao fields for a second by force. When he wanted to release a second Tao field, the other automatically receded into his body, but he was able to stop it by simply blocking it out. However, that caused a pretty hefty loss in spiritual energy, as the energy simply dissipated instead of returning. There were also no bronze flashes appearing in the brief seconds he managed to keep the two Tao fields going simultaneously. Zack figured that the density of energies wasn't enough to force a reaction when it came to Tao fields. He could only sigh in disappointment at yet another failed experiment and move on. If Tao fields could be considered the gaseous form of the Tao, then directly infusing it into a weapon or skill would be the liquid equivalent and allow for a larger amount of spiritual energy. The Tao storm had contained most of his spiritual energy, and perhaps that kind of density was what was needed to summon the bronze flashes. But he couldn't just crank out half his soul in one attack, but rather recreate that amount of energy in a single point to force a fusion, like before. The problem was that Tao infusion wasn't like a water faucet. He couldn't just increase the lever and have more Tao energy flow out of his head. Until now, things had been binary, where he either chose to infuse something or not. The amount of energy it cost would depend on the skill or item getting infused, and it would regulate itself automatically. Only when he was in an extremely agitated state did he sometimes manage to push beyond his limits by a small degree. This was the problem that he had struggled with over the past 3 days, trying to control the amount of mental energy that ran down his arm into his axe was like trying to push more air into a bag with his bare hands. Zack kept trying various approaches he had thought up while resting as he ran between the ant's legs, but nothing worked. Since he still couldn't figure out any way for him to control the amount of energy, he could only try to fuse the two Tao's once again. It felt like Zack's mind would split apart as he forcibly pushed his two Tao fragments along his arms before they streamed into the axe at the same time. It was yesterday when he had finally found a way to force both his Tao's to converge. He used each of his arms like a conductor for one fragment, only trying to push them together when they reached his axe. He only needed to use some miasma as the method of delivery. However, there were still many problems to solve, and the first trial was the reason that he was using a temporary axe at the moment. Verun had roared in Zack's mind the moment the two streams had entered the axe before rebuffing the two Tao fragments. Zack first thought it was because it wasn't able to properly utilize both fragments at the same time due to its lacking materials. But his next experiment showed that there were other issues at play. When Zack tried the same thing with a spare axe, the two fragments had entered without a problem. But the whole axe exploded into scrap metal in an instant, maiming his hands and almost blinding him. Zack had first thought he'd managed a fusion at the first try, but he quickly realized he had overestimated himself. The explosion came from the two untamed energies along with the miasma causing strain on the weapon rather than a fusion of the two. It was still an impressive outburst of energy, though, and the axe scraps had either been infused with the fragment of the axe or fragment of the coffin as they shot out like projectiles in every direction. Zack figured there was an issue of speed. He would never be able to squeeze out half his mental energy for a single strike, as he had done during the Tao Discourse. He instead wanted to rely on smaller amounts of energies colliding at higher velocities. It was like the experiments on old Earth, where scientists shot electrons at each other with extremely high momentum to see what kind of energies were released by the collision. He needed to turn himself into a particle collider. Having a plan was one thing, but finding a solution was something else entirely. A minute later, his axe couldn't take it any longer and turned into a bomb as well. Zack had learned to see the signs by this point and threw it away in time, but he froze a second later. What about cyclic strike? He had given up on the skill for his new path, but perhaps some parts could be repurposed. The two fractals from this skill were perfectly placed on his shoulders, and he would easily be able to push his two Tao fragments there before they continued down his arms. The correct usage of the skill was to infuse his Taos into the two fractals and sort of braid the energies in a way that allowed the two Taos to mesh together and combine. After that had been accomplished, he could infuse whatever he wanted with this new combined energy. Zack had never really gotten much further than infusing both fractals with their respective Taos. He hadn't even been close to finishing the type of mesh required, but that wasn't his goal at the moment. He felt like he was so close to the answer that he could taste it, and he gave the ant a quick punch to throw it away before he prepared to test his newest theory. Having gained some breathing room, Zack then took out two daggers and stabbed one into each shoulder without so much as a grunt. Ichor started to drip down his arms and back, but he didn't care as he hurriedly activated the two maimed fractals with a smile that would no doubt look a bit deranged to an outsider. The Tao fragments entered the two fractals of cyclic strike, but Zack didn't care at all about balance this time as he tried to force the energies to the center of the fractals as quickly as possible. Normally, it wouldn't have been possible without properly following the winding pathways, but he had carved a new path for himself. The two daggers acted as conductors and allowed him to skip all the intricacies of the skill fractal, leaving just the part that acted as an entrance funnel along with the core of the skill that Zack guessed was responsible for the fusion. The weapon blade allowed him to pass by over 70% of the fractal by just pushing the energy right through the metal itself. Adrenaline started to course through his body when he realized that it was actually working, and blobs formed from his two Tao fragments shot toward each other in his chest. But happiness quickly turned to panic as Zack felt a terrifying buildup taking place when the two blobs merged, and he desperately tried to push it out of his body. He wasn't sure if he'd even survive if the blob exploded like his axes, taking half his torso with it. The energy only got halfway down his arm before the ball of energy collapsed in a soundless implosion, annihilating a good chunk of his bicep as it disappeared. The pain was excruciating, but Zack was still delighted with the result as his eyes were trained on the wound. The implosion had contained a bronze-colored spark. Zack was in no mood to stay on the battlefield any longer, and Zack ordered the 10 chains of profane seal to kill the ant who was already on its last legs from the sparring session. The battle outside had already ended as well, with liches going through the battlefield to find salvageable bodies. The corpses were placed in two piles. The second pile was the fallen revenants and the insectoids who weren't salvageable, and these bodies were slated to be incinerated. He was still curious as to why it was impossible to re-reanimate a revenant, but he put the matter aside and instead hurried back to the outpost to go over the results.
"You're back, Lord Piker."
Uro, a steward that the Zarvadar Kingdom had provided for him, said with a bow as Zack barged through the door.
"Is there any news from the guild?"
Zack asked as he sat down with a grimace as the wound in his arm made itself remembered.
"I will inquire,"
Uro said and left the courtyard, allowing Zack to go over his findings. His arm was a mess, but his short experiment with cyclic strike as a base was a huge step forward. There was a lot of work left to do, though. First of all, he couldn't keep stabbing himself with knives to create shortcuts in the pathways. It was both time-consuming and inefficient compared to using real pathways, not to mention that it hurt like hell. Right now, Zack had only an extremely crude proof of concept that needed huge improvements to be considered passable. He would somehow need to redraw the skill fractals of cyclic strike to better fit his purpose, but he had no idea how to go about doing such a thing. The next step was to control the fused energies long enough for him to hurt his enemy rather than himself. Right now, it couldn't be considered a weapon as much as a creative way to kill yourself, akin to creating a bomb right next to your heart. If the spark had gone off just half a second earlier, he might have lost the whole arm instead of just some muscle tissue and eye core. The question was whether he really needed to stay any longer on this level, as these kinds of experiments could be performed while climbing. He still had many skill upgrades waiting for his Draugr class, but he wasn't sure how long it would take to grind them out with his army. Zack guessed he would have to hear what the guild had to say before deciding whether to stay or not, and he looked up with anticipation as his steward soundlessly entered his courtyard 20 minutes later.
"A representative from the Inscriber Guild is here,"
Uro said with another bow.
"Let her in,"
Zack said, knowing that they would no doubt send Ildera again.
"Lord Piker,"
the beautiful Vice Guild Master said with a curtsy the moment she entered the courtyard.
"Ah, you're wounded. Let me—"
"It's fine." Zack cut her off before she used his wound as an excuse to fondle him again. If Zack hadn't known she was a revenant, he would have thought she was a pale human. Ildera had one of the highest levels in the whole kingdom, and she had become remarkably close to a living being, as far as Zack could tell, with the notable exception of running on miasma rather than cosmic energy and food.
"How did it go?"
Zack asked as he took another healing pill, one specially made for his undead constitution, and provided by the woman in front of him. The formation master looked a bit unhappy about being rebuffed, but seeing Zack using the pills she had gifted him lessened her displeasure noticeably.
"I'm afraid we failed you," Ildera said with a pout as she sat down next to him. "Feel free to punish me as you see fit."
"What went wrong?" Zack asked with disappointment, ignoring the innuendo. That Ildera had failed to create the array disks for the 9 Reincarnations manual was a bit of a blow, and he started to wonder if even his sister would be up to the task. Chapter 19. Breeder Clone.
"We weren't successful in inscribing the life-aspected formation," the undead inscriptionist said as she took out a couple of pitch-black array disks. "You will likely need a life-attuned array master for that half. I do maintain some contact with the master who might be able to do it, but it will probably require a few months."
Zack stared at the inscriptions with bemusement for a second before he looked down at the densely inscribed array disks. Was there really a need to leave him on a cliff like that just now? "This is great. No need to disturb your friend," Zack assured her after he composed himself. "How many did you manage to inscribe?"
"We made 6, but I assure you we use high-quality materials," Ildera said with some confusion. "They will not break, even after repeated usage, so having 6 of them is overkill."
The first thing Zack had done after arriving at the outpost was to commission the construction of array disks for his soul-strengthening manual. The forces he encountered in the tower were all at least E-grade by now, and many had skilled inscriptionists who could help save some time. He still had over 40 days left in the tower, and he wanted to use the days to the fullest. It would also save his sister a lot of effort if he could simply get his hands on array disks, rather than having her spend weeks on creating 2 cultivation caves. The reason he'd commissioned multiple copies was even simpler. He needed to improve the odds of the arrays making it out of the tower.
"What do you know about redrawing skill fractals?"
Zack suddenly asked, taking the opportunity to learn from an E-grade cultivator.
"Seeing as you're an expert on inscriptions, I hope you would have some insights to share."
Ildera surprisingly didn't answer, but rather looked at Zack with a troubled expression.
"I am not qualified to discuss such matters with the young master. I am sure that your elders will show you the way when you reach the point of creating, adjusting, and fusing skills," she said. "I am afraid that me intervening at this point would deviate your path of cultivation."
It appeared that using his imaginary master and elders as a shield from any questions and courtships had its drawbacks. He tried to cajole some answers for a while, but she was like a brick wall, citing that it wasn't her place to disrupt his master's plan. She eventually relented a bit by gifting him a handful of sheets that were actually made from the skin of E-grade cultivators. Zack's hair stood on end when he realized what he was holding, but it was apparently a material made for practicing inscribing skill fractals and pathways. It was the closest one could get without starting to experiment with their own body. The Array Master once again tried to turn the short visit into a romantic outing after the main matter was dealt with, but she was soon enough led out from the courtyard by Uro.
"My master contacted me earlier. He ordered me to take down the breeder within the day as a trial. I will be leaving in a few hours," Zack said when the steward returned.
Uro, the ever-stoic servant, simply inquired whether Zack needed assistance or any specific equipment for his task. Zack asked for some more warrior pills after some deliberation, along with another batch of miasma crystals. The steward bowed and left the courtyard once again. Ildera, not being willing to help out with redrawing the fractals, was a bit of a letdown, but she still had provided a lot of help. Her words had indicated that modifying skills was possible, and not some cockeyed idea he had come up with. Even more surprising, she had actually mentioned that fusing skills was possible as well. Creating skills was nothing strange. It wasn't necessary, but somewhat expected after reaching E-grade, at least if you had a higher rarity class. Those with uncommon classes would probably get by with just buying skills, but Zack had a hard time believing someone talented enough to get an epic class could enter D-grade without having created at least 1 skill tailored to their cultivation path. Modifying skills to better suit you felt pretty straightforward as well, though it was probably a lot more complicated than it sounded. Skill fractals were delicately designed networks of thin pathways that allowed cosmic energy to transform into all kinds of magical effects. The skill fractals were something like an imbuement of Tao, as far as Zack could tell. Pushing the energy through the network infused the unattuned energy with higher truths, which was how cosmic energy turned into anything from fireballs to Zack's fractal edges formed from chop. That was also why one could ponder on the Tao through studying skill fractals. Even small modifications of a fractal would destroy the delicate pattern the fractal created, and you really needed to know what you were doing to not completely mess everything up. Fusing two skills was another beast altogether. Zack had no idea where to even begin with such a daunting task. He could only assume that the system assisted somehow, since skill fusions sounded way too complicated to understand for someone who hadn't spent eons studying fractals. Zack looked up at the dour sky with some wistfulness. It almost felt as though he was back on the island again during those two solitary months, an ignoramus fumbling in the dark, trying to make sense of what was going on. He had stepped over a mountain of corpses to get where he was right now, but he was still just someone on the threshold of cultivation. In the beginning, he was like a caveman, crudely pushing cosmic energy into various body parts to increase his strength. But was he all that much better now, impaling himself with daggers to create shortcuts in his skill fractals? The steward returned soon enough, and he wordlessly handed over a cosmos sack. Zack didn't think much of it, but his eyes widened in shock when he scanned the contents of the pouch.
"What's all this?" Zack asked with shock.
"It's from the royal family. Killing the breeder is just a stepping stone on Lord Piker's path, but it is the difference between life and death for the kingdom of Zarvadar. This is a token of our appreciation,"
Uro said, some life appearing on his face for the first time since he had been assigned to Zack. The reason Zack was so shocked was that there were roughly 100 D-grade Nexus crystals inside the pouch, along with all kinds of pills and herbs. It might not be much compared to the vast amount of wealth he'd found inside the spatial ring belonging to Rasulil, but it was still the biggest haul of any single level unless you counted special encounters, such as the Pool of Tranquility. Since Zack had made his decision, he immediately prepared to set out. The commander of the outpost apparently wanted to hold a banquet in his honor, but Zack declined, as he much preferred to depart without any pomp or ceremony. Fearing some sort of commotion, he donned a cloak before he slipped through the back door of the mansion to blend in with the soldiers. It was still a bit weird, walking among the undead in their natural habitat. It was as though he were in some sort of bizarro world, where everything was similar but not quite the same. He had seen a young couple walk hand in hand, one of them a human revenant sporting a decent amount of decay, and the other a corpse lord, stitched together from at least 5 different races. Another thing that had been a bit surprising was their love for scents. Almost all of the undead living in the kingdom were too low-tiered to eat and drink, so they looked elsewhere to find the satisfaction a good meal could bring. Many enjoyed complex fragrances, and most households created their own incense or potpourri. Zack had long known about the location of the level guardian, and he switched over to his human form when he was far enough. It was still quite a distance, and it took him 6 hours to reach the insectoid stronghold where the breeder clone was located, even when he employed Loamwalker to its fullest. The location wasn't very hard to find, as it was a huge crater caused by the insect hive slamming into the undead planet. The breeder had arrived alone and quickly started to produce an army for conquest. The insectoid queen had essentially shot out a bunch of hives specially designed for space travel, and they would autonomously conquer planets they landed on before reconnecting with the main hive. Zack deliberated for a few seconds, but he eventually decided to head in as a Draugr. He had somewhat fallen into the routine where he relied on his human form for most tasks, while occasionally switching over to Undying Bulwark when Hatchet Man proved a bad fit. This was reflected in the slanted masteries of his skills, and Zack decided to push through the whole of the 7th floor in his Draugr form, unless a level was a particularly bad match. Sneaking inside the hive was out of the question, no matter what class he chose, as the whole crater was crawling with warriors. But full frontal conflict was Zack's forte, so he started to grow from activating Vanguard of Undeath as he ran down the slopes. Just seconds later, enraged screeches echoed across the area as Zack mowed down one warrior after another with the help of Immutable Bulwark. He didn't bother killing too many of the warriors, wanting to save his miasma. Some unlucky warriors got bisected by the massive miasmic axe from getting too close, but most just got lightly maimed before they were thrown out of the way. He was, however, forced to start cutting his way forward when he reached the hive, which pretty much looked like a nondescript comet. The entrance was completely blocked with innumerable warriors and beast companions, and Zack was completely drenched in a mix of blood, ichor, and green goop when he finally reached the breeding chamber. The breeder clone seemed to be something like a mix of a worm and a factory, a gargantuan mound of flesh over 50 meters long. Zack barely had time to consider a course of action, as a massive burst of fragment-empowered acid threatened to swallow him whole. He initially planned on enduring the blast before countering, but his danger sense screamed that doing so would be a monumental mistake. He could only slam his foot into the ground to teleport next to the massive insect with the help of Profane Seal, and then stomp again to erect the cage. His pitch-black bardich swiped at the enormous slab of flesh, but he was surprised to see that the creature had a consistency like pudding. His axe went right through, but the only effect was that he almost got doused by another spurt of acid. Even worse, just seconds later, the large wound had closed. Zack briefly considered swapping over to his other class to deal with this weird creature, but he suddenly had an idea. The 10 chains all stopped killing the soldiers that kept emerging from pods that covered the breeder's body, and instead shot far into its gelatinous flesh. The clone violently started to shudder and shoot acid in all directions, forcing Zack to desperately scramble back and forth as he combated the tide of newly hatched insectoids that tried to rip him into shreds. However, he almost moaned in pleasure as torrential amounts of energy kept surging into his body from the breeder clone. The amount of energy that the chains managed to drain from the queen was shocking, and a massive cloud of miasma had long formed over Zack's head, as he simply had no way to store this much energy. It took a full 10 minutes for the 10 chains to completely drain the queen, which awarded Zack a final burst of energy that confirmed the kill. The whole breeding chamber was partly submerged in massive pools of corrosive acid by this point, and together with the black clouds of winds of decay, the hive had truly turned into a hellscape for any being, living or dead. Zack wasted no time inside the hive and quickly stepped through the teleporter. The combination of his shocking endurance and the layers of defensive skills that Undying Bulwark provided made Zack a nigh impervious tank. But he still looked beyond saving when he appeared in the middle of the streets of some massive town. His pale skin was sloughing off his body in multiple spots, and Zack shuffled into an alley as he threw a healing pill into his mouth. It appeared the days of easy victories were over. The breeder queen hadn't been an insurmountable enemy, but the thing had been both hard to kill while possessing unique strengths that would make her a pain to fight for either of his classes. The realization forced him to stay in place and heal up before heading out, as he didn't dare to challenge the level in his current condition. Zack was thankfully able to reach an almost perfect condition within a few hours, thanks to the pills he was given, allowing him to resume his climb. He wanted to regain the days he'd lost on the first level, sparing barely an hour a day for sleep and meditation. But progress was getting slower and slower, and not a single level provided a quick solution. Worst of them all was the 60th level, where he was trapped in an endless loop of restrictive arrays for 9 full days. When Zack finally managed to break out through a bout of unhinged fury, he didn't even attempt to complete the quest, but instead opted to turn the poor guardian into a pile of meat. The unceasing experiments into fusing his Tao fragments were also a cause of constant delays. In fact, the largest threat to his well-being was his own training regimen. The guardians left their fair share of wounds by this point, but none of them had managed to blast one of his lungs into smithereens like he had during a particularly ill-fated training session. Zack was essentially leaving a trail of bodies and black ichor in his wake, but that trail was at least getting closer and closer to the peak of the seventh floor. Chapter 20. The Tallest Trees. Agras warily looked around as he appeared in the new world. Only when he saw that he had appeared on a busy street did he allow himself to look down at the gash at his side. Luckily, the mayor's all-out attack had barely missed as Agras jumped onto the teleporter, allowing him to avoid wasting a week recuperating. Who knew that the old goat would become so infuriated? Becoming a grandfather should be a happy occasion, after all. That world was done with, but he couldn't help but once again wonder if these worlds were real. Would he become a father? Well, not that he wasn't one already, after his years of whoring and playing around about back home. There were no doubt at least a dozen little bastards with his blood running around the streets of Terferizen. The demon's gaze darted back and forth across the street as he popped a pill into his mouth, his shadow tendrils, meanwhile, spreading out in search of threats and treasures. But it just looked like a somewhat flourishing metropolis, though the energy density was pretty abysmal. Luckily, he didn't have to search for long, as the quest screen appeared on its own the moment he started walking. Become an honorary disciple of the Transcendent Master. The demon sneered when he saw the name. Anyone who had the gall to call himself a transcendent master in a place like this was no doubt an insufferable asshole of the highest order. Just the thought of becoming a disciple to such a pretentious prick made his hair stand on end. An ordinary person like that would no doubt request the full ceremony with kneeling and offering thanks to the heavens. It didn't take a lot of time to find out that the so-called Transcendent Master was an advisor to the crown and one of the guardian pillars of this country. The title had been awarded him by the former emperor after having fought off an invasion of the Grev Reapers, whatever that was. He currently lived alone, and he accepted 5 honorary disciples to carry on his legacy every year. The next trial was, unsurprisingly, tomorrow.
Leech, you'd better help me this time, or I won't feed you for a month, the demon said as he sat in the hotel room he had hired for the night.
Agras still had no proper means to communicate with Leech, but the creature living in his shadows released a